You're listening to an Ancient Future podcast produced by St. Benedict's Table, a congregation of the Anglican Church of Canada, located in Winnipeg, Manitoba. I'm your host, Jamie Howison. This podcast is the third in a three-part series exploring what it means to be a church in an urban space. For this one, we invited Linnell Bergen, the lead pastor of Hope Mennonite Church, to join us and share what their congregation has learned from residing in our West Broadway neighborhood. Hope Mennonite Church is located just up the street from us, 4 or 5 blocks down Broadway. They live in a very similar space. They've come asking some very similar questions. And so it was good to listen as Linnell reflected on what they've learned, where they're headed, and what they now know they don't know. This is Linnell Bergen.
Thank you, and good evening. It is good to be with you here. As Jamie says, I have been at Hope for quite a number of years, 13 years, actually. And Hope has been in this neighborhood not quite since it began, but for quite a long time. Hope is a 35-year-old congregation. It was created in the mid-1980s when Bethel Mennonite Church was outgrowing its space, and they thought that one solution might be to start a daughter church. They had started a daughter church in the 60s, that's now Charleswood Mennonite, and one in the 70s, that's now Fort Garry Mennonite, and now this we were their third and, so far at least, final daughter church. So they appointed a group, a small group, to begin to envision what a new church could look like. And one of the things that emerged as people met and talked together about what they might want to create is that they wanted to create a church that was more in the center of the city and not a suburban church. And they wanted to then live in the neighborhood and contribute to the well-being of the place where their church was meeting. So for a while at the very beginning, Hope met in the gym at Westgate Mennonite Collegiate. And then when Westgate was remodeling and they had to find another space, they were meeting for a while. Let's let that go by. Meeting for a while at what was then Canadian Mennonite Bible College, now Canadian Mennonite University. But that was not a great location for them because obviously it is not centrally located, which was where the people were living. Then there was a fire. Young United Church burnt down in 1987, I believe, just after Christmas. And what emerged from the ashes of that was the desire to create a community space. And so they were looking for partners, and one of the partners they were looking for was another church congregation to share the space with them. And Hope said, hey, that's us. We want to be part of that. I don't know what gave them the courage to think they could do that, because they were a baby church. They were about 25 people, maybe 30, maybe occasionally 40, I don't know. But they were a very small church, and with very, very shallow pockets, I guess. They were mostly students or young couples who just did not have a lot of spare cash. But that actually made joining the community at Young, what became Crossways in Common, a huge privilege and opportunity, because there was this energy and this commitment, and Young had the money from the insurance and so forth, and all these other organizations joining in, and we just kind of got carried in on the wave of all of that and became partners, even though, you know, our contribution was so very small at that time. When that space opened in 1993, fall of 93, we moved in, and we worshiped in that sanctuary until fall of 2018, when we moved across the street to Thompson Funeral Home. Now, I've already been asked today, and I've been asked a few other times, why are you meeting in a funeral home? Or maybe, first of all, why did you leave Crossways? There were a variety of things that were happening all at the same time. We were outgrowing the space for worship, and the space that we needed for Sunday school and potluck and other things we wanted to do together. Young was needing the rental income renting out the other spaces more long-term would provide for them. So when Gordon Bell, for example, used several larger rooms as an alternative classroom, that meant that we had no more space for potluck. Well, we could go into the mini gym, but that never really worked very well for us. So that was part of the problem that was causing us to decide we needed to leave. And Young also was struggling with retaining young families because they had a later worship time. And anyway, it was a confluence of different events, and it was just a hard decision, a sad decision for us to leave worshiping at Crossways. We still have our membership there, our partnership. I still have my office, and our associate pastor has her office there. So we're still there, but we no longer meet to worship there. But as we were deciding where we were going to go and asking a lot of questions of, you know, who are we and what do we need, we came to realize there was a strong drive to stay very much in the same neighborhood. We like being here. Even though it means dealing with the complexities of urban life, or maybe because it means dealing with the complexities of urban life. So as we explored various nearby options, it was interesting to hear how people were wondering how we would be defined by where we located ourselves. For example, Westgate, again, going back to our roots, has this beautiful atrium now that we could rent from them. And we have a connection to it. It's our school, in a sense. But it's in Armstrong Point, and that's a very different neighborhood than West Broadway. How would that change us? Or what if we were to find a space in Wolseley? What would that do to who we are, our identity, or our self-perception? We were grappling with these questions. And then Thompson became an option. It is literally right across the street from Crossways and Common. I can go into my office on Sunday morning. I have a little gray box, plastic box, that I load up with my things, and I carry them across the street, and we begin. We have storage space there, and we have our hymn books in their pews. And we've been meeting there, since 2018, but of course with about a two-year break for the pandemic. So living, working, and worshiping in an urban setting brings complexities. We are, nevertheless, a predominantly white, middle-class, well-educated congregation. We have very few marginalized or racialized folks who participate in our life together. So how are we being relevant to the neighborhood? About 10 years ago, in response to that question, we did what most churches do, and we formed a committee that we called the Community Engagement Committee, whose task it was to help us to engage and to be aware of what was going on in West Broadway. But that committee always struggled to kind of find its identity. A few times we would find a foothold. We started an annual goods and services auction, which is a really fun event that we have together that raises money for West Broadway Community Services based at Crossways. And before COVID happened, we took over one of Young's Sunday lunch events every month, one every month. They serve lunch, or were serving lunch before COVID, to the community, to anyone who wanted to come every Sunday. And so we started doing that once a month. But aside from those two things, there were various attempts at trying things, and nothing was really quite working. And then COVID shut everything down and has given us an opportunity, I suppose, to regroup, to ask ourselves, what are our priorities, or how do we reach out to this community? You know, what can we do? What should we do? What do we want to do? What do we have energy to do? And it's an ongoing question. So here's a couple of stories that I've been grappling with the last few months. Easter Sunday morning, 2022, just a few weeks ago, I was at the pulpit preaching my Easter sermon. Earlier, before the service started, a man wandered in, someone we did not know, and the greeter offered him a mask. He refused, and he started walking out of Thompson. And I happened to see him on his way out, and not knowing his conversation with the greeter, said, "Oh, there's a mask here. Would you like one?" "I don't wear a mask," he said, "and that's why I'm leaving." Okay, so out he went. There I was 30 minutes later, preaching my Easter sermon. And I saw him sitting at the back, not wearing a mask. But I wasn't going to do anything about it at that point. And then I saw him get up And he got up from his pew and he wandered into the back corner there where all the coats are, and I couldn't see him at that point. And then he wandered out maybe 20 seconds later and he was putting something in his pocket. Now everyone's looking at me, and I'm the only one that can see what's going on back there. And it is Easter Sunday morning, you know? And I'm thinking, what do I do? And so I stepped away from the pulpit. I can't do it today because there's all these things recording me, but I stepped away from the pulpit, and I just asked for a few people to go just to check to see what happened. There was someone who may have taken some things from the coats, you know? And a few men got up, and I went out and checked about what was going on. And I stepped back into the pulpit, and I just stood there for a little while just to regroup myself and to let the congregation also to just refocus. And then I finished my Easter Sunday sermon. I later learned that nothing had been taken. The phone the man was putting into his pocket was his own. The complexities of urban life. A few Sundays later, there were others who wandered in, including one who got as far as the garage. Now, if you go into Thompson, it's a labyrinth, you know, but he found his way into the garage at the back where we keep all our bikes and our strollers. We come in on Sunday morning and they get put into there and we close the big door and, you know, it feels nice and safe. But he wanders into there and there he sees all these bikes and another exit door. But fortunately, it happened that there was a Thompson staff person there. There's always one Thompson staff person. And so she, you know, asked him to please leave, and he did. But that left us feeling very vulnerable again, because it would be very easy for someone to just to see this lovely collection of bicycles and open the door, and everyone in the neighborhood could just come in and grab one, because we aren't watching the bikes, you know, when we're having service. So in discussion with Thompson about what to do, they decided they would lock the sanctuary door 15 minutes after the service had started. Unless there was someone from Hope who was willing to sit in the foyer area to keep an eye on things. None of this feels good. Here's another story. These past few months, as we were grappling with when and how to begin to meet together in person, and we wondered about having a vaccine mandate and also a mask mandate. While we know that everyone, I think, or very nearly everyone at Hope has been vaccinated, we also wanted to express our care for those in the congregation who are vulnerable, and therefore to mandate, although we didn't use the word mandate because it feels kind of harsh, so we used the word require vaccinations. And in fall, last fall, when we were just starting to open at that point, we actually had someone at the door asking for proof of vaccination. However, so on the one hand, that is a way for us to care for each other. And on the other hand, it is a way to exclude those from the neighborhood who are not vaccinated. So we had lively discussion. What do we choose? To be welcoming to the physically vulnerable in our own congregation, or to be welcoming to the socially and emotionally vulnerable who may not have had access to the vaccine, or who may have reason to be suspicious of government vaccination programs? So we chose, as I said, to mandate or require vaccines, although now we are no longer checking for that. And we chose to require masks. I'm not sure how much longer we'll be doing that, but I expect we will be revisiting it in fall. But we know in doing that, we will be leaving some people out, some neighborhood people, some vulnerable people who just want to come and gather and hear a song and just be with people. At Hope, I would say we like process. I don't know if that's quite the right way of stating it, but we do process well. I can say that. And we can talk ourselves into or out of nearly everything or anything. But we do take our decision-making very seriously, and we struggle with great seriousness, but also with some playful fun, to care for each other and our community well. So in all of these things are the security of the building, the welcoming of neighbors, mandates and requirements. We struggle and we try to figure out a balance between keeping ourselves safe, keeping our community safe, being welcoming and open. All these things are not easy decisions. Just one more note as I talk about sort of being an urban church, and that is, as I sent the question out to my congregation, you know, what would you say about being an urban church? And it was interesting that a number of people responded to say, well, it means we need to be respectful and careful of our sibling rural churches, because they are themselves much more marginalized in the broader church context. And I think that's true also in general, of our province in general, of who has power and who gets a say in things. Our rural churches tend to be more conservative theologically, politically, and socially than our urban churches. And that's a generalization that is not always true. There are exceptions, but a generalization. One of the lovely things about being part of a denomination, a part of a group of people that gather together, is that there is chance to rub shoulders with people who disagree with us, who are different than us. We can learn from each other if we stop to listen. We can worship together. We can find common ground. And it is sometimes the responsibility of the urban folks, as people who generally have more social power, to be open to listening to what our rural siblings have to say. Well, this has been great. Thank you. It's good sometimes to just sit back and ask yourself why, you know, and to have to grapple with that, and even to invite, you know, people from Hope to grapple with the question of why is it that we are an urban church, or what does it mean? How is that relevant? So this has been a good exercise, and I thank you for the invitation.
Well, that was the opening session from Linnell. Just her presentation to a group of us at the church and joining online, who listened as she reflected on the life of Hope Mennonite Church in the neighborhood. It was followed by 40 minutes of question and answer from our community, reflections, insights, ideas. It was a good evening, and we want to thank Linnell for doing that. You can go to the show notes, where you'll find a link back to the podcast web post, and also find the links to the two other sessions we did in this series, the first with Travis and Stephanie Unger of Many Rooms Community Church, and the second with Greg McPherson, former director of the West Broadway Community Organization. We'll see where this all lands us. One of our folks who was there suggested that maybe there's room for a fourth podcast in the series where I might summarize things and offer reflections coming out of the St. Ben's site specifically. So who knows, there might be another idea exchange in this series in the fall. If you're interested in supporting our online work, you can go to our homepage. That's linked in the show notes, and in the upper right-hand corner, there's a donate button. But as I always say, there's no obligation. We do these for the joy of it and to just engage. So, thanks for listening.